We present Anna Cropper, John Bennett, and Ronald Herdman in another of the spy thrillers by William Keenan. The Vienna Connection.
You can leave the sugar, Mrs. Heaton. I'm sure it has been cleared for electronic devices.
Yeah, I think we can safely assume that to be the case, sir.
Trouble I have to go to bring you lot a cup of tea. Trust nothing and no one in this place anymore. And it's getting worse every day.
Thank you, Mrs. Heaton. You can leave another packet of biscuits, I think.
Very good, sir.
Is all secure, Robson?
All secure, sir. Soundproofing, air conditioning in order. No electronic activity registering.
Well, gentlemen, we can now turn to item number 3 on the agenda. As you know, the Americans are very concerned about the situation. The President recently raised the subject with the Prime Minister, who promised cooperation. As a result, we have the Undersecretary on our necks, demanding, to use the historic phrase, action this day.
But the Vienna Connection has been a thorn in our side for years.
All the more reason I would have thought for concerted action.
Once before we collaborated in a scheme to solve the problem, and the Russians seem to know our moves even before we made them.
Which is perhaps why our actions have proved to be so ineffective. Hart. What's your opinion?
I reiterate Robson's point, sir. Whatever we do, they seem to know what we're up to. That's the problem. Whether there's collaboration or whether we go it alone.
Slingsby?
Oh, for years, we've suspected a leak in Vienna. I feel this must be plugged before we can make any positive moves.
I agree with the strategy, Slingsby. But we are committed by the PM to take action with the Americans. We have to start the ball rolling, as it were.
But how? Without them getting to know in advance, sir.
I had rather hoped that you, as heads of the various sections concerned, would be telling me.
We are being precipitated into making moves that could turn out to be rash and ill-advised. We're naturally reluctant to commit ourselves, Mr. Strafford.
So I see.
Whatever we do, we need a completely fresh approach. New operators and completely separated from any of the old structures.
I couldn't agree with Robson more, sir. A completely fresh approach.
And free of all existing organizations in the area. That is imperative.
Well, gentlemen, all we have to do now is find the fresh approach. How would you feel if we had, say, a cotton wholesaler travelling with a wife who is pregnant, accompanied by an Irish aunt?
Well, ideal cover, sir. Better than a full-time operative using such a cover. But how do we find the cotton wholesaler wife and aunt?
Am I correct in thinking you're referring to my Haywood and Company, sir?
You are, Robson.
Well, they have been used on 2 occasions.
And with admirable results.
Ah, but for how long?
As long as Haywood is travelling abroad selling his wares. How many trips does he make in any given year? And how many times have we used him? It could be argued we haven't made enough use of him.
Not by me, sir. We have already exposed them to 2 highly dangerous situations. Caesar's knives and before that, the Essen operation.
Which means they are now experienced and reliable.
But it's too much to ask of them without putting them in the picture.
We can't possibly do that, no. We must confine the information to those here present, and even fewer Americans.
But if things get out of control,
then we had better make sure that this time things do not, I repeat, do not get out of control. I too will take a hand in the arrangements, Robson. I'll start making overtures to the Americans about Madeleine. And meanwhile, you might let me have Hayward's file.
Oh,
Hayward and Company, good morning.
Jean, this is Mrs. Hayward. Could I speak to my husband? It's rather urgent.
One moment, Mrs. Hayward.
Jean, tuck these up. Two copies.
It's
and...
your wife.
Oh, I'll take it here. Thanks. And how's my expectant spouse?
Michael, could you come home? Right away.
But it's... It's 11:20. Darling, you're not going into premature labour, are you?
No, I'm not going into premature labour or anything else of that nature. Having a baby isn't an illness, as you and apparently everybody else seems to think these days, darling. I'm blooming. Blossoming. Never felt better.
You're eating chocolates.
Mothers-to-be have the right to be a little self-pampering.
Uh-huh.
I didn't ring to talk about my health. It's just... Well, we've had a funny, peculiar parcel.
Funny, peculiar parcel? How peculiar?
Odd. Strange. Not a normal parcel.
It's not ticking, is it?
No, it's not ticking. Bulging would be a better word. Bulging with surprise. I don't think we should discuss it any further on the phone. Come home and take a look.
I think I'd better.
You'll never believe what Father Christmas is sending you this year.
Money. Lots of it. All in £10 notes.
And in mint condition, I might add.
Well, how did it get here?
You might well ask. I saw a plain van outside. A man seemed to be coming to the door, but the bell didn't ring. He never reached the doorstep, as far as I was concerned. Next thing I saw, the van was being driven away.
So how did you come to find the parcel?
At first I thought he must have come to the wrong house, realised his mistake and cleared off. Then I just had a feeling that this was the address that he was looking for. You see, he wasn't uncertain in any way. He seemed to know where he was going, so I went to the front door, and lo and behold, there was nothing. Then I went round the side of the house. There it was, by the kitchen door.
How discreet of him.
And how unobtrusive. A plain brown paper parcel, no address, no indication of sender, no marks whatever.
Unblemished brown paper.
Do you think they could be forgeries?
Damn good ones if they are.
Well, what are we going to do?
As possession is nine parts of the law, and as I have more than a faint suspicion where this parcel might have originated, I suggest we go out and spend it.
What about our accountant? What if the tax people find out?
I'm inclined to think, darling, that the reason for the plain brown paper parcel is just that, so that our accountant and the tax man don't get to know about it. Well, you can't very well put on a tax form or in the firm's books to spying £5,000.
You think it's them?
I would hazard a guess it is none other.
But that Rome trip we did, I mean, that wasn't spying. It was merely helping with government inquiries.
How discreetly put, Doris. Oh, well, Aunt Claire will be delighted. Split three ways, her Christian charities should benefit enormously.
I heard that, Michael Hayward.
You were meant to, Aunt Claire. You come into money.
Me? Money? Oh, I don't believe it.
Well, take a look.
Heavens above. And what's all this spilling out of that parcel now?
Special delivery, Doris tells me.
Oh, you're pulling me leg. Will you let me get to the sink, Michael? I've these potatoes to do. Where's it come from?
Oh, we're not exactly sure, but it might come under the general heading of government expenditure. All right, I'll answer it. 439-3635.
Hayward?
Robson, I must be psychic. I'd been expecting a call from you, or your colleagues.
As you're speaking from home, I gather you got the parcel.
We did. Brown paper and totally anonymous.
Our speciality. It's a thank you for your efforts. A token of our appreciation. Non-deductible, non-declarable.
And no receipt needed?
No. Just the confirmation that it adds up to five.
Thousands?
Yes. Hmm. We rather messed up your honeymoon, and who can put a monetary value on that?
Who indeed?
Some things money can't buy, Hayward.
I'm glad to hear such principles still exist in our materialistic age.
Which is why we thought we might make amends in a more realistic way.
A more realistic way? And what way might that be?
Another honeymoon. Vienna is marvellous at this time of year. We've tickets for you and Doris and Aunt Claire. We've even booked for you at a concert given by the Vienna Boys Choir.
How thoughtful. But isn't that taking a little too much for granted?
Oh. Heywood, I'm sorry. You're offended.
No, not offended. Suspicious.
No need, no cause for it. We often pay by brown paper parcels, and we often provide holidays for...
For what, Robson?
for small favours.
Ah, now we're coming to it. The strings attached section.
Oh, Heywood, you are suspicious. The only thing required is a small, simple courier-type routine assistance. There's a woman called Madeleine. We'd just like you to keep her company on the plane.
As part of our party, so she passes unnoticed.
That's it in a nutshell, old man. Simple and straightforward.
Those are two things I would never suspect you of being, Robson. As innocence is to children, complication and deceit is to your calling.
If you're interested in our offer, you'll be met at the airport tomorrow. 9:15, sharp.
Does that bring back memories, darling?
Of a rather exciting honeymoon. And Aunt Claire associating with the devil, or its nearest equivalent, a KGB colonel.
Oh, there's some good in everyone, my mother used to say.
Not everyone. There must be some exceptions. Ah, Robson, good morning. We were just talking about you.
Favorably, I hope?
No, as exceptions to certain rules.
I see there's been patches of fog about the country, and I thought there might be some delay. But fortunately, this airport is clear.
I see you have an assistant. Well, aren't you going to introduce us? Manners, Robson?
Yes, an assistant to Robson is what I am. I'm the one who collects the tickets. I have yours here, Mr. Heywood.
I must say, you look most distinguished for a messenger boy. When I said Robson's assistant, I was being facetious. You look much more than that.
Appearances are often deceptive, Heywood.
Heywood, eh? No, mister? You seem so authoritative as well for a mere assistant.
Heywood, I wonder if, while we're giving you the tickets, we might have a quiet word with you.
We'll get some magazines. Over there, I think, Aunt Claire.
Yes, now just get myself a knitting pattern.
Madeleine is already aboard the plane. She's flying from Toronto. One of our men is with her, a chap called Wimbledon.
Wimbledon?
Like the home of tennis. He's often been ribbed about it.
No doubt.
Likes tennis, too, which makes it a bit awkward at times. You're all booked in at the St. Stephen Hotel.
A foursome or fivesome?
Foursome. Your party and Madeleine. Wimbledon will just see you settle in, and then we have something else for him.
I bet it isn't a game of tennis.
Could well be, Heywood. We like to see our men take part in sport and other recreational activities. We look after our employees.
I'm glad to hear it.
Which is why I'd like you to memorize this phone number.
That's an Oxford number, isn't it?
Yes. You can dial it direct, STD, etc. The reply will be, Burnage College, can I help you? Now, all you have to do is ask for Professor Kingsbourne, and you'll spell out the Bourne, stressing there's a U in it.
Now, why do I need to ring such a number when I'm only doing a routine escort courier service?
Well, I suppose the answer is, we just like to be careful.
I thought that would be your reply. But what is the truth?
You do make things difficult, Heywood. All I can say is, if you have any problems, give us a ring. Happy honeymoon.
Pity Aunt Claire's on her own.
No, she has got a seat by the window. She looks as if she's happily finishing off the decade of the rosary she always has on takeoff.
I hope she's saying one for all of us.
Well, whatever makes you say that, Doris?
I just have a feeling about this trip. Something isn't right.
How do you mean?
I'm not sure. I can't put my finger on it. Madeleine hasn't said a word, and Wimbledon, after his effusive welcome, has also gone into his show.
Oh, not so loud. He'll hear you.
Someone taking my name in vain?
My wife is just wondering if everything's all right, Geoffrey.
Why? Shouldn't it be?
Madeleine, is she feeling okay? She hasn't said a word since we joined you.
She hasn't to speak, old chap. Didn't they tell you?
No, they didn't.
These last-minute instructions. Look, let me get everyone a drink. Mrs. Heywood, what will you have? Gin and orange, gin and tonic?
Pineapple juice will be fine, Mr. Wimbledon.
Geoffrey, you really must call me Geoffrey.
Then you must call me Doris. Mm.
And Michael, what about you and your aunt?
I think she'll have the same as me, whiskey.
Quite right. You can't go wrong with whiskey, can you? I'll join you.
And Madeleine?
She'll have one, too.
Mm. I understand you're quite a keen tennis player.
Well, with my name, it'd be strange if I weren't, old man. But to tell you the truth, I don't play much anymore.
Oh?
I hurt my foot last year. A bit dodgy now.
I see.
I rang for service, but no one seems to be coming. Must be ignoring us for some reason.
She spotted you. Like your headrest back a little, Doris. More comfortable that way.
I've ordered two taxis. No need for us to be crushed. I'll go in the first one with Madeleine, and you can take the second. I'll have a drink waiting for you at the hotel. It's the Hotel Charlemagne, old man.
Hotel Charlemagne?
I was told it was the St. Stephen.
No, they changed the arrangements at the last minute. Causes confusion that way, but mainly among ourselves. Well, see you in a few minutes then, old boy.
There goes call me Geoffrey. Wimbledon like the home of tennis, old boy.
Oh, this way, Aunt Claire.
What are you thinking about?
Someone I used to know about 15 years ago. Can't say why.
Seemed to have that effect on me now, come to think of it. A bit out of date.
Like the British Secret Service. They've been up to their tricks for the last 400 years. And given the impression they're a bit out of date is all part of the image. But they're not as daft as they make out. And neither is Mr. Wimbledon like the tennis.
I would agree with you there, Aunt Claire. Ah, here's our taxi. Hotel Charlemagne, please.
Welcome to the Hotel Charlemagne, madame, sir.
We have two rooms booked. They would have been reserved most probably in the name of my company, Haywoods.
Haywoods. One moment, sir. Madames.
How's that for oldie-worldy charm? Did you see the bows you said, madame?
It makes you feel quite a lady, so it does.
Are you sure the reservations were made in the name of Haywoods, sir?
I'm not sure. I assumed it would have been.
I can find... No Haywoods.
Not even for Mr. and Mrs.
No. No Haywoods, I'm sorry.
I wonder if there's been a mistake and we've been booked in at the St. Stephen.
I can phone the St. Stephen for you.
That's most kind of you. Could you do that?
Certainly, sir. Madame. One moment.
Oh, I made it at last. One stage I thought we weren't going to get a hotel. That's a lovely room. Nice, comfortable, springy bed.
I wonder why Wimbledon sent us to the wrong hotel.
There has been a mistake, sir, madame. Wonderfully courteous, wasn't he? But darling, you're miles away. Any further thoughts?
I was just thinking how to make a phone call. It's a letter I should have asked Jean to send before we left, but we're not going into the office. Look, while you're unpacking... I'll just slip out for a moment. I want an adapter for my electric razor and one or two other things. I'd like to speak with Professor Kingsbourne, please. Kingsbourne, B-O-U-R-N-E.
I'll put you through to the professor. Haywood, where are you?
Oh, Vienna, where else?
I'm all right.
Yes, but Wimbledon took a separate taxi with Madeline.
Oh, did you say Wimbledon?
Yes. As you said, he met us on the plane. Geoffrey Wimbledon, like the tennis.
Haywood. Drop everything, do you understand?
Yes, but what about Wimbledon and Madeline?
Just get clear. Wimbledon is not one of ours.
Not one of ours?
The real Geoffrey Wimbledon was found half an hour after your plane took off. He had been shot through the back of the head and his body dumped just off a highway on the outskirts of Toronto.
Doris, I'm back.
Did you catch Jean?
No. She must have gone home.
When the cat's away, the mice play. Did you find out about Madeline in Wimbledon? Is she next door?
I just made the one call.
Well, come in and close the door. You don't look as if you're staying, as they say in Lancashire.
Oh, don't I?
While you're standing there, you're blocking the doorway and Aunt Claire can't get past.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Aunt Claire, you've gone very pale.
I'm fine. But Michael, I wonder if you'd come and take a look in me room. Mice.
Mice?
No one brought up on an Irish farm is afraid of mice, especially Aunt Claire. Something's frightened you.
Just Michael, Doris, not you.
Yeah, I'll lock the door behind me.
But what is it?
Just stay in this room.
It's the wardrobe, Michael.
What's wrong with the wardrobe?
See for yourself. I was unpacking. I laid a skirt and dress on the bed, and I turned towards the wardrobe to hang them up. Then I saw it.
Saw what?
Wetness at first underneath it. Then I realized what it was. It's dripping from the wardrobe.
Turn away, Claire. Madeline.
Oh, may the Lord have mercy on her soul.
Please, take a seat, Mr. Haywood. Lieutenant, I want you to stay.
Yes, Captain.
Now, Mr. Haywood, I would like you to tell us all you know of the dead woman found in the room of the wife of your aunt.
My wife's aunt, Captain, I think you mean.
Oh, yeah. The room of the aunt of your wife. I have not had much practice with my English of late. But please, Mr. Haywood, proceed with the details as you know them.
There's not much I can tell you. My wife, Doris, and I met the woman whose name we understood to be Madeline on the flight here. We were in the same row, four seats.
And where was the woman Madeline sitting?
By the window.
Did she speak for you?
No. As a matter of fact, she didn't say a word all through the flight.
Why, Mr. Haywood, didn't you think it strange?
I thought it exceedingly strange, Captain Frickner. She couldn't have been feeling well. What other explanation is there?
Quite so. Now, as you know, we have questioned your wife and your aunt, so I am comparing what you tell us with what they have said.
I'm sure they will have told you the same as I.
Quite so. They also state she didn't say a word. But if you didn't speak to her or she to you, Mr. Haywood, how did you know her name was Madeline?
Her companion told us.
Companion, Mr. Haywood?
Yeah, a man by the name of Geoffrey Wimbledon, spelt like the home of tennis.
Wimbledon. A very English name. You spoke to him?
Yes. In fact, he brought us two whiskies and a pineapple juice. By the way, where are my wife and aunt now?
At the hotel, Mr. Haywood. They have been allocated different rooms in another part of the hotel, well away from the tragic incident.
I'm glad to hear it.
But please, continue telling us about Mr. Wimbledon.
There isn't much more to tell. We met on the plane. He bought us drinks.
And then you went your separate ways. Is that it?
Exactly.
But you ended up at the same hotel as Madeline.
Eventually. We went first to the Charlemagne by mistake.
Oh, of course, yeah, I had forgotten about the Charlemagne. It raises a rather interesting question.
Does it?
Yes, Mr. Haywood. If this person called Wimbledon was a stranger to you, why was it he who told you your accommodation had been booked at the Charlemagne? That is what Mrs. Haywood told us.
Perhaps she misheard him.
And your aunt? Did she misheard him too?
Quite possibly.
Amazing, isn't it? Both your wife and your aunt say you went to the wrong hotel because Wimbledon said you had been booked in there. I wonder how they got that impression, Mr. Haywood.
I wonder. I'm afraid I can't help you on that score.
Well, I didn't think you could. But now, let us return to the finding of the body. What can you tell us about it?
Well, Aunt Claire came to our room looking somewhat distressed and asked me to go back with her to her room.
I opened the wardrobe doors after seeing the blood and found the body. The woman had been shot through the head.
Well, we all seem to agree on that aspect of the case, Mr. Haywood, which is an improvement. But haven't you omitted something?
Omitted what?
Oh, no. Don't look so offended, Mr. Haywood. I was referring to your little walk. You had just returned from it when your aunt came to see you.
So I had.
What did you do on your walk?
I made a phone call.
Why did you use a phone box when there was a phone in your room?
Well, I felt like a little exercise, and I thought I would combine the walk with a call to my office. Then I wanted an adapter for my electric razor and one or two other items.
A call to the office, was it?
Yes. There was a letter I should have sent before I left Manchester. I wanted to tell my secretary to make sure it was posted.
So if we speak with your secretary, she will tell us this letter you forgot is now on its way to its destination.
No. Not quite, Herr Frechner. I didn't get through. I think she must have gone home early.
Oh, yeah, of course. Your wife told us that, Mr. Haywood.
Truth will out.
Eventually, Mr. Haywood. Or so we hope. But let us get back to this Mr. Wimbledon, whom we have been unable to find or trace.
Oh?
He went off in a taxi with the woman Madeleine to the hotel.
Presumably.
I'm glad you said presumably, Mr. Haywood, because he was not with her when she arrived at the hotel St. Stephen. She booked in alone, and you arrived shortly afterwards, so we are told. No one saw your mysterious Mr. Wimbledon.
Which means he's vanished?
If he existed.
Well, what do you mean?
We checked your flight. No Mr. Wimbledon was on it, and no ticket was issued in his name. But I understand that the body of a man called Jeffrey Wimbledon was found in Toronto. Now, Mr. Haywood, can you tell me what you are really doing in Vienna?
Mike?
I hope I'm not too late for dinner. I could eat a horse.
Well, I took the liberty of ordering for you. Veal cutlets.
What's that you're having?
Zaccatorte. Said to be world famous. It's delicious.
Well, where's Aunt Claire?
Didn't you see her at reception when you came in?
No, I didn't notice her.
Well, just as we're sitting down at the table here, there was a message for her to go to reception. They can bring her main course when they bring yours.
Oh, well, we might as well eat while we can. I wonder what Vienna prison food is like. Water's not bad.
Yes, the thought had crossed my mind that they might be providing you with a cell for the night. Well, how is the police questioning?
Embarrassing. And Frechner made me feel I'd given a very unconvincing performance. He's confiscated our passports. We have to remain in Vienna, and I have to report to the police each day.
Well, why didn't we just tell them the whole truth? At least it would have given us the satisfaction of embarrassing Robson and his faceless ones. A small thank you, another honeymoon indeed.
Well, I try to be as truthful as possible, but there are some things you just can't say, such as receiving a brown paper parcel if you'll escort someone who ends up as a corpse in a wardrobe.
Let's face it, Mike, we are rather restricted by circumstances.
Darling, you should have been a politician. Restricted by circumstances. We've got ourselves into a bloody mess because we've been conned by Robson and company into doing their dirty work. Again. Who are you smiling at?
The gentleman sitting over there. He's been trying to catch my eye all evening. He smiled at me as you were going on just then, and now I'm smiling back.
I'll punch him on the nose.
Now's your chance. He's coming over.
Mr. and Mrs. Haywood?
Yes. But how do you know our names?
My name's Roberts. Lance Roberts. I'm a journalist working for the European edition of Tribune.
Oh?
How do you do?
And may I join you for a few moments?
By all means.
Well, I'd like to begin by assuring you that this meeting is strictly off the record. Anything you tell me is not for publication unless you give me specific permission for the use of anything divulged.
Well, that's very reassuring of you, Mr. Roberts, but what can we know that's worth divulging?
I'll put my cards on the table, sir. My information is that you've been interrogated by the police about the death of a Russian woman agent.
A Russian agent?
Well, you didn't know?
One learns new things every day, Mr. Roberts.
Was her name Madeleine?
It was.
One of her many aliases.
Well, you obviously know more about her than we do. We met her for the first time on the plane coming here.
I see. I also understand you told the police that she was accompanied by a man called Wimbledon.
I don't deny it. You seem to have a very remarkable and reliable source of information, if I may say so.
Thank you, Mr. Haywood. I pride myself on having made some useful contacts, yes. Now, might I know if you felt the police had accepted your story about Wimbledon?
That you'll have to ask the police captain who questioned me.
Captain Frickner, was it?
It was.
Off the record, Mr. Haywood, they don't believe you. They know a Jeffrey Wimbledon was killed in Canada. International Exchange wired the story some 5 hours ago. They think it's the same one, and he never made the journey.
Well, then, who was it we met on the plane?
That's a good question, Mrs. Haywood. Whoever it was, he was trying to frame you for Madeleine's murder.
You seem very sure of that hypothesis.
Well, reason it out for yourself, Mr. Haywood. Why should he send you to the wrong hotel if it wasn't to give him time to kill her and throw the suspicion on you?
With friends like Wimbledon, who needs enemies?
Tell me, Mr. Roberts, if Wimbledon was killed in Toronto, what now?
Well, again, that's a good question, sir, and one a lot of people want answered. In fact, I have a proposition to put to you.
I thought you might have.
Do you want to hear it?
We wouldn't miss it for the world, would we, darling?
Not even for the world and all it contains.
Look, I'm quite serious about this.
And so are we. But owing to certain other propositions that have been put to us recently, we have, shall we say, become a little cynical?
More than a little cynical.
Quite so. In fact, downright doubtful of human goodness and sincerity.
Exactly my feelings too, darling.
So you see, Roberts, your proposition faces a none too receptive audience, to say the least.
But don't you think it would help if you could prove the existence of the man you met on the plane who passed himself off as Wimbledon?
It would make our story more credible.
I know where Wimbledon will be tomorrow night. And you have to take my word that I can't get in there, but you can.
Now, that is an interesting situation, Mr. Roberts. Are we correct in thinking that your next suggestion is that we should put our heads into the lion's mouth?
My suggestion is that you avoid doing anything dangerous or anything that leaves you alone with any beast of prey. You should mingle freely in the company of many people. You should enjoy yourselves. You should, well, you should have yourselves a ball.
Oh, we're having a ball, all right.
No, I was referring to a real ball. A glittering occasion like in the olden days.
Who?
Women in magnificent ball gowns. Men in uniform or wearing white tie and tails. Glistening chandeliers. Gay waltzes. Champagne.
Oh, to be in Vienna.
You're interested?
Oh, we're both fascinated. Do go on.
Well, the Hungarian embassy is giving a ball to mark some anniversary or other. Now, it'll be held in a palace in the woods a few miles outside Vienna. A place built, so I'm told, for Marie Theresa when she became Archduchess of Austria and Queen of Hungary. An ideal setting.
Then why are you missing such a splendid occasion?
As I said, it's impossible for me to go to that ball.
Cinderella can't go either, I'm sorry to say, Mr. Roberts. I have nothing to wear.
Minor detail.
There's another minor detail. The Hungarian embassy seems to have overlooked sending us an invitation.
All can be arranged.
Oh. Have you connections or contacts inside the Hungarian embassy?
Unfortunately, no. But there is a secret entrance, a gate hidden in the wall, and from it, a path leads through the woods and comes out of the terrace.
You're not suggesting we gatecrash such a glittering occasion?
A man and woman in evening dress coming out of the woods onto the terrace? Why, it would naturally be assumed that you were just having a quiet stroll. So well-dressed and in such a romantic setting, who'd think of gatecrashers?
This, hidden gate...
I have a key. You see, I've done it before, successfully.
But you don't want to try it again?
Correct, I don't want to try it again.
No further explanations?
No further explanations, period.
We're back at the line again, darling.
I thought we were about to discuss how Cinderella goes to the ball.
How does she?
In one of the most magnificent ball gowns that money can buy.
Now you do intrigue me, Mr. Roberts.
It'll be on my expenses. A dress which won't have to go back at midnight.
You mean I can keep it?
Yes.
Darling, I do find Mr. Roberts very persuasive.
Ah, but such a dress would need jewelry to add the finishing touches. If we're going to gate crash, we have to pay attention to detail.
Sure we do. And we can rent the jewelry. Do I take it you're agreeable then?
Prince Charming here would have to be provided with his white tie and tails.
Naturally.
So now for the million-dollar question. What do you want us to do?
Just take a couple of pictures. I'll provide you with a miniature camera. I want pictures of Wimbledon, copies of which I'll provide for you to show the police. And pictures of one other person to be named later.
Is that all?
Sure. Well, the pictures will make my story, and they'll also help the police to accept yours.
Do we accept this invitation?
Yes.
Yes.
Great. Then I'll call on you in the morning for a shopping expedition that will, we hope, make you the belle of the ball, Mrs. Haywood. Good night. A pleasure to have met you. And good night to you, Mr. Haywood, sir. Until tomorrow.
Good night.
Mr. Haywood, sir. Such a difference to age these well-brought-up Americans show. Mike?
Yes?
I don't think we should have accepted that invitation.
To tell you the truth, Doris, neither do I.
And Mike?
Hey, do try to keep the alarm out of your voice when waiters are about.
But Aunt Claire, she hasn't come back. Whatever can have happened to her?
Is this the Palace of Schönbrunn?
Oh, yeah. Over there is the Neptune Fountain.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Shin.
Pardon me, madame, but you wish to know anything about the Palace of Schönbrunn?
Oh, I'm just waiting for someone, thank you.
I know. If you would come towards the palace with me, please.
But...
I will explain on the way.
Very well. But just keep your distance now.
The palace was designed by Fischer von Erlach to rival Versailles. Did you know this?
No, I didn't.
The Turks were besieging Vienna.
Where, O'Connell?
Talk of the Turk! Boris Balakov!
Are you not pleased to see me?
Oh, I'm always pleased to have the opportunity of trying to convert the murderous heathen.
Oh, you can go now, Stefan.
Very good, sir.
One of your assassin friends?
Let us walk together. Irish Catholic lady, upright woman, fine example of your fiery race.
Less of the blarney, no.
We will walk towards the flat-lit palace and we'll talk and be friends, huh? And we will not discuss either politics or religion. How's that for you, Claire O'Connell?
Well, as politics can be defined as man's relations to man, and religion as man's relationship with God, well, that leaves only the weather.
I think there is a little frost in the air tonight.
You could be quite right in that assumption, Boris.
You know, Claire, détente is the word now. Coexistence. One day it might be possible for a good Catholic woman like yourself to coexist with an unbelieving materialist like myself.
We are coexisting at the moment. I think the word you have in mind is cohabit, Boris.
It's a wonderful thought.
And you can control those thoughts right now.
But man's material needs have always influenced the course of history.
What you're thinking of comes under man's material comforts, not his material needs.
Man's material comforts, then.
Rubbish either way.
It's the material need that influences history.
Nonsense.
How so?
You're so obsessed with your Marxist interpretation of history that you can't see the woods for the trees. You make the facts fit the theory.
That history is influenced by man's material needs is fact. Fact, Mrs. Claire O'Connell.
The course of history has been influenced above all else for the last 2,000 years by one man's death on a cross. Now, where was the material need in that?
How do you know he existed?
Oh, Boris. You yourself are a living testament to his existence. You, a KGB officer?
Me?
You ought to know, for haven't your kind persecuted enough of his flock? Then there are the Roman historians who mention Jesus and his followers. Pontius Pilate's report to Caesar. And a specially commissioned report by the Jewish elders on him and his family.
Yes, yes, of course. I was only testing your knowledge, Claire, yes? And what's that to do with my offer of coexistence or cohabitation?
Everything. In your materialistic paradise, Boris, you don't allow belief in God or his son or life everlasting. Your latest ruse, so I understand, is setting dogs on Christians at worship. So going to daily mass, I might find a little difficult.
You'll listen to fascist smears.
I listen to the cries of the persecuted.
Why do you want to argue always? I offer you the hand of friendship, and you bite it off.
That's what your dogs do. They do the biting.
Claire O'Connell, you are so Irish. You are impossible, and you are unreasonable.
It's a thing you're not used to, Boris. It's called free speech. Ever since early Christianity, freedom of conscience and freedom to choose his eternal destiny has been man's great privilege.
Apart from the Inquisition and a few other religious persecutions, of course.
Oh, point taken. But the root cause in all cases is not respecting man's freedom.
But in any well-ordered society, some freedoms have to be sacrificed for the common good. Is that not so?
Since when has man trying to love God and his neighbor as himself gone against the common good? Ah, that's it, isn't it, Boris? I see.
What do
your
you
objection to Christianity? If a man goes about loving his neighbor and doing good, how can he perform acts of terrorism and murder and spread hatred and revolution?
Let me ask you a question, Claire.
I'm listening.
Do you think, as in your so very free Western society, that people should be free to make fortunes out of selling pornographic sex and perversions, to freely peddling drugs which turn their victims into degenerates, who then threaten the whole of society?
I do not. And you know I don't.
We don't either. But we curb the freedom of exploitation for the common good. That's why child murders and assaults are virtually unknown. And why it is safer for a woman to walk the streets of Moscow than the streets of London and New York. Huh? Shouldn't that commend itself to a Christian lady?
Well...
Well, what, Claire O'Connell? Come, tell me honestly. Don't you think there is less vice in a communist state than in your capitalist societies? Huh? Yes or no?
Yes. I'll give you that, Boris.
Aha! So you concede that we do have our ideals.
Some of you. But now, you answer me this, Boris. If I married you with full nuptials, and I was a good and faithful wife and made you a cheerful, happy home...
I would be delighted.
Ah, but would I be allowed to practice my faith openly, fully?
But there might be difficulties. But take Poland.
You would be taking me to Moscow.
As I have told you, there is a new mood. Détente, coexistence.
Yes, but while you call for coexistence on one side of the world, you're clubbing someone to submission on the other.
You see no good at all in us, woman.
I see no good at all in you. And never will until you allow freedom of conscience.
Back we go again.
And back we always will go to the basic point.
So much for détente.
Well, at least we're honest with each other.
At least there is that. But, Claire, I came in friendship.
So did I.
Fiery woman of the Irish race. Fine figure of a woman you are still. But I wonder why I ever fancied you.
Persecutor that you are, I still pray for you. Hoping that some counter-assassin won't cut you down one dark night.
I must go. Now we have become sadder and calmer. But before we part, I have some advice for you. No, look at me, Claire. Beware of palaces in romantic settings.
I don't know what you're talking about. You mean I shouldn't have come here?
No, not this palace. Another. Haywood will make good sense of it. He's a fool if he doesn't.
Mike, somebody's just gone into Aunt Claire's room.
Mm-hmm. Somebody in a bad temper who seems to be coming this way.
You better see who it is.
Well, I've no intention of letting them stay outside the door all night.
Michael, I'd like to have a word with you.
Aunt Claire, we ought to have a word with you. It's nearly 11. Where have you been?
That's what I came to talk to you about. I've seen Balakirth.
Have you, by George? And how is the amorous KGB colonel?
Michael Haywood, you know as well as I do, it's just a platonic friendship.
Platonic?
Michael, Arctan wants to tell us something.
Well, the message I got when we went to the dining room...
When you vanished without saying a word.
That's what I'm coming to. Now, it wasn't a phone call. There was a taxi waiting for me and a note from Boris. He said it was important, so I took it.
And to which mysterious cafe did it whisk you?
It didn't whisk me to any mysterious cafe. I met him near the Seanbrunn fountain.
No candlelit dinner with violins playing in the background.
You don't think an Irish widow would be going places like that with a Russian spy colonel, do you?
You did before.
Well, that was when I didn't know who he was or what he was.
So what did you do when you met at the fountain?
We talked.
Talked? What about?
About many things. Serious things, I'd have you know. Before he left, he gave me a message for you. That you have to beware of palaces in romantic settings.
Mike, he knows.
Knows what?
That we've been invited, Doris and I, to a ball at a palace in the woods.
Woods? Romantic setting. That's the warning, then.
It would appear so. Good job you met your KGB colonel.
Michael, please do not refer to him as my KGB colonel.
Would you prefer Russian friend?
Oh, he's not even that anymore. I would prefer no mention of him again, if you don't mind. It's late, and I've still me rosary to say before I turn in. Good night to you both.
Good night, Aunt Claire. You don't think they've had a tiff?
I thought I did detect a certain animosity.
A lack of unity and togetherness in mind and spirit, perhaps?
Oh, no, darling. Unity and diversity. Two opposites making a complete pattern. Nuts and bolts.
Your feminine reasoning evades me, Doris.
Don't be so dim, darling. Attraction of opposites, men and women, they're different.
Ouch! I've sensitive ribs.
Serves you right for being sarcastic. I didn't marry because you're the same as me, but because you're different.
Of course. Nuts and bolts. Unity and diversity. But what's that got to do with having a blazing row, which they appear to have had?
Oh, Mike, you are dim. It shows she's concerned about him, that she cares. If she didn't, she wouldn't bother having a row, neither would he.
Let's have a duty-free nightcap, and I'll drink to the depth of your feminine reasoning and understanding.
Well, one of us has to have a superior intellect. Now, Mike Haywood, use your male logic to work out whether we should take note of the warning from Balakiff. Are we going to the ball?
Well, you'd hate to turn down that magnificent ball gown offer.
That I would.
And they can't very well bump us off before hundreds of invited guests.
That is hardly what I would call logical male reasoning. I think you want to go to the ball.
I think you're right. But now we've had the warning, how do you feel?
Frightened, but the threat of danger does add zest to the outing.
Yes. Disturbing, but pleasantly stimulating. I think that ball gown should be even more lavish than anticipated.
For once we seem to be totally in agreement, darling. Cheers. Even though our reasons differ.
A perfect example, darling.
Of what?
Of what you were talking about. Unity in diversity.
Yeah?
My name's Haywood, and I'm reporting to Captain Frickner for my ball and chain.
You lose this? Ball and chain?
I have to report to Captain Frickner.
So, now I understand. Comes this way, please.
Thank you.
Englishman to see you, Captain.
Mr. Haywood, please, sit down.
Thank you.
That is all, Weissman.
Yes.
Well, Mr. Haywood, what have you to tell me?
For starters, there's the one about the Irish tug-of-war team. Penalized for pushing.
Hmm? Oh. Yeah, you were English sense of humor.
Keeps us going in the darkest hours, you know.
You want to change any part of your story, Mr. Haywood?
No. Why should I?
Well, I thought you might have slept on it, and in the light of day, something might have occurred to you.
No. We had quite an uneventful night. Dinner and to bed.
Dinner? With whom, Mr. Haywood?
With my wife, of course.
And how about your aunt? Did she not dine with you?
I rather think she got fed up waiting for me, Captain Frickner, and went for a walk.
How interesting. She went for a walk
and missed her dinner.
Remarkable woman, Aunt Claire. Often fasts in Lent.
But we are not in Lent, Mr. Haywood.
She might even fast at other times, too, for all I know.
So, you have nothing further to tell me?
Nothing. I hope that doesn't mean a tiny cell and leg irons.
No, not leg irons anymore. We do have a selection of vacant small cells.
I don't like the sound of that.
You are not meant to, Mr. Haywood. Well, now, what are you planning to do today?
Well, believe it or not, I'm going to help my wife choose a dress. Like women the world over, she's more interested in shopping for a dress than the predicament we're in.
I hope she finds one to her taste.
That's most considerate of you, Captain. Does that mean I'm free to go now?
Yes. You can go. I would hate to come between husband and wife at a time like this. Another honeymoon and the choosing of a very special dress, Mr. Haywood.
Good. Here's my knife. Well, do you approve?
Breathtaking in its splendor.
It's my billowy fairy tale ball gown I shall always treasure, Mr. Roberts.
Well, as I said, it's the best in Vienna.
The best indeed. I feel like a princess.
You look like a princess. Princess Doris of Ruritania.
And all these frills hide my tummy, isn't it marvelous?
You'll be captivating, Mrs. Haywood. And now, Mr. Haywood, in the men's department are your white tie and tails. And I've also provided you with a fascinating miniature camera. It's concealed in a dress stud in your shirt front. To work it, you merely touch a button in your waistcoat. A miracle in miniaturization. Another spin-off from space.
And how do I aim this miniature miracle to take a picture?
Just stand in front of the guy and twiddle the button of the waistcoat.
Which guy?
Wimbledon, for one.
And?
And one more.
I think it's time you told us the one more.
You won't know him.
Try me.
Krollmann. K-R-O-L-M-A-N-N.
You're right, I don't know him. But if I don't know him, how can I photograph him?
Oh, he's easy to recognize. Distinctive facial characteristic. A puckered left cheek.
A puckered left cheek?
Yes, caused by a bullet going through his mouth and out of the center of the cheek. No amount of plastic surgery can hide it because the nerves on that side of the face were damaged.
Sounds like he's had an interesting life.
A hard life, but a varied one. Surprising the people he knows.
Perhaps this may appear to be a little contradictory after what you've told us, but is there any possibility that he may know me?
Well, there is that possibility. You might even have a mutual acquaintance.
Then surely...
But right now, let's see how you look in tails. I think you're the type who'd really suit him.
What acquaintance, Roberts?
Only Krollmann can answer that.
It's 1:01. Roberts said he would pick us up at 7 on the dot. I'm quite excited.
So am I. Distinctly excited.
You know, Roberts was right. They do suit tails. Aren't we a handsome pair?
A pair of fools. There we are, dear. You've been warned, and yet you're determined to walk where angels fear to tread. He said, beware of...
I'll go.
On the dot, as promised.
Does our carriage await us?
Our Mercedes is at the hotel door, ma'am.
There's no need to prostrate yourself, Mr. Roberts. Just walk a few paces behind me to hold my breath. What a high wall. Good job you didn't want us to climb over.
The door is just out of sight around the angle of the wall here.
It's quite eerie. You're sure this doesn't lead to the witch's castle?
The path winds through the woods, and from the top of a hill, you'll see the floodlit palace. Just a few minutes' walk. Now, can I take your wrap, Mrs. Haywood, and your coat, sir? Then it'll look as if you've been for a stroll and are just returning to the ball. Good luck.
You sound as if we're going to need it, Roberts.
It's just an expression. All the best, then. I'll be here from midnight to take you back. Enjoy the ball.
What a glorious clear night. Look at the stars.
They're glistening as though there's a touch of frost about.
Oh, yes, my shoulders are quite chilled without a wrap.
Oh, here.
Oh, that's better.
Do I hear music?
Lilting and uplifting. I feel I want to waltz through the woods.
A few more yards and we'll be able to see the palace.
I'll race you.
And fall flat on your face over a fallen tree. Oh, no, no, no. You'll stay with me.
Yes, Lord and Master.
There it is. Like a beacon in the night.
Whoa. Takes my breath away. You're sure we haven't been transported back to the 1800s? It's like a Rhineland castle with its round towers and turrets. I feel we ought to dance for the night and then at dawn you kiss my hand and leave for Waterloo.
On the 810th?
The battle. Where's your sense of romance?
Oh. Am I cavalry or foot regiment?
Hussars, I think. Or I could make you a captain in the 3rd Regiment of foot. Strange. There's no one on the terrace. Not a soul. I would have thought it would have been alive with people drinking champagne.
Served by flunkies in powdered wigs, breeches and bright gold braid, I presume.
Why not?
Because they're a serious lot, these Hungarians.
Why hold a ball?
You'll have to ask them yourself. Would you take my arm, Mrs. Haywood, and we will proceed up these stone steps to the terrace?
I'm beginning to feel nervous again.
Must be your interesting condition, as they used to say. But have no fear, good woman. Captain Haywood will go before you.
No, I'd rather you stayed with me.
We'll walk boldly across the terrace, either as if we owned the castle or we're both members of the Politburo. Can't go wrong, then.
Mike, stop. The ballroom's empty.
No dancers, no musicians, nothing.
Then where's the music coming from?
Amplified records.
It's like a ghost palace. It's eerie, weird.
Even more weird now all is silent.
Oh, darling, let's go back. This isn't at all like I thought it would be.
Or Captain Haywood at a 3rd foot run. It might be an idea at that.
Who could have switched off the music?
Come to the ball with me, my love. Come to the ball. But not to dance this frantic rhythm of our days. Too soon the lights are growing dim and lilting music no longer plays. Only the good we do, the love we share, will take us beyond this earthly night. Beyond the grave, beyond the stars, into eternal light.
That's quite beautiful. Who wrote it?
An innocent young man of about 25, conscious of his supernatural destiny and trying his hand at metaphysical poetry, my love.
Not the young, aspiring Michael Haywood of our joint acquaintance.
Himself, no less. In his less cynical era.
What interesting hidden depths.
Not totally hidden, partially submerged. A multitude of talents ready to resurface at any moment.
Well, your poetic talent can produce some pearls of thought for our next anniversary. Will you write me a poem?
Of course. I'll give it my devoted attention. There was a young lady called Doris. Ouch!
Not like that. I want something on the lines that you've just quoted. How did it go? Come to the ball with me, my love. Come to the ball. But not to dance this frenetic...
Frantic.
I prefer frenetic. Frenetic rhythm of our days.
Too soon the lights are growing dim.
Darling, you shouldn't have said that last line. The lights are going out.
Then let's take advantage of the darkness and nip back through the woods. It came from across the ballroom. Stay here.
Mike, don't leave me. I'm coming with you. Mike, what have you got?
A genuine candelabra I saw in the ballroom before the lights went out. All I need now is... Yeah, like so. And we have candle power. 1, 2, 3, 4. All right, come on. We seem to be in an oak-panelled study.
That chair?
It's got a rapier pushed up to the hilt through the back of it. And straight through a gentleman in evening dress who's sitting on it. Right through the heart. The sign of the expert assassin.
Oh, his face.
A hollow, puckered left cheek. Crowlman.
Oh, Mike, please don't touch it.
Turn away. If we've got to make a forced retreat back through those woods, a rapier is... As good a weapon as any for close combat in darkness. Come on.
Greenwich College. Can I help you?
I'd like to speak with Professor Kingsbourne, please. Kingsbourne. That's Bourne. B-O-U-R-N-E.
Heywood, where are you?
A bar a few kilometers from a palace where the Hungarians were supposed to be having a ball tonight.
What's its name? The bar, Heywood?
Regina. Regina Bar, it says here.
Leave in 5 minutes' time and start walking towards Vienna. You'll be contacted.
Can I give you a lift? The college contacted me. You look starved to death, both of you. Here, a flask of brandy. I'll turn up the heater.
Have a drink, Doris.
Oh, I don't like brandy, darling.
Like it or not, you have a sip.
It's warming.
So, you went to a ball which they had cancelled.
Cancelled? When?
Early today. They made frantic calls to let everyone know it was off. Those who had been invited, that is. So, what did you find?
Krollman.
Krollman? He managed to get there.
Oh, has he managed to get there? But apart from the cemetery, it'll be the last place he gets to.
They killed him?
Whoever they are. A rapier through the back of a chair and clean through his heart. If that can be turned as clean.
Well, death would be instantaneous.
We heard him cry out, but he was very dead when we reached him.
He didn't pass on any message.
He didn't pass any message.
And there was nothing on which a message could have been written?
I didn't see anything.
So what did you do?
Well, as I was unarmed, I removed the rapier. We came back through the woods, and just before we merged onto the road, I threw the damn thing away. We got back there, and I rang the number. But you couldn't have been at the college.
I arrived at our embassy earlier today. The boys at Burnage alerted me just as soon as you'd phoned their number.
What now?
I think I had better make arrangements for that rapier to be found before the police get at it. If your fingerprints are on it, you might have to spend the rest of your life here in Austria.
I seem to have stuck my neck out in many ways. Don't you think I deserve some honest explanations? Notice I stress the honest part.
That's what I feel, Heywood. You deserve the truth. Well, I'll start by admitting I'm not Robson's assistant. I've now taken charge of the Vienna connection.
The Vienna connection?
Vienna is the center of a Soviet spy ring whose object is to infiltrate numerous sleepers into the West. From Vienna, they fly out as Canadian or American businessmen, accountants, even students who infiltrate the universities. They become seemingly good citizens, most of them, just waiting to be activated. Some, having established their American or Canadian backgrounds, have moved into Britain and Northern Ireland. We're pretty sure that Colonel Balakiev is the man behind this operation.
So who was Madeline?
Oh, an agent we'd caught in Canada, and she'd been persuaded to cooperate with us in Vienna. We thought travelling with your party might have given her a better cover, but we were wrong. The KGB were onto her before she left Canada. They killed Wimbledon and substituted their own agent.
He seems so angry.
The KGB are perfectionists. They have special schools where their agents live, eat and sleep as Americans, Canadians or Englishmen. They become more American or British than the Americans or British. Though we do find they are often a few years behind the times. Take Wimbledon, the substitute.
A bit old-fashioned.
We even know his tutor, an upper-class Englishman who defected 10 years ago.
Does that mean you caught Wimbledon?
We might have.
Look, I thought I was going to get some honest answers. Before I do anything else for you, I want to know the true situation. The truth.
We did move rather quickly after your first phone call, and we did net the substitute, Wimbledon.
Did? You used the past tense then, as if it was all over. Mm. What happened to their Wimbledon?
After what happened to ours, only one thing could happen to theirs. To use the sporting phraseology his tutor drummed into him and which he used so well, the result was he lost. Game, set and match eventually went against him.
Where are we stopping?
To change cars. You're going to be driven to a nice safe house in the country. There, they'll ask you similar questions to those I've asked. Tell them what happened, apart from one thing.
What's that?
Tell them that Krollman was still alive when you reached him. Before he died, he gave you a message for Strefford in London. A message that no one apart from Strefford has to hear. I'm Strefford, by the way.
I thought as much.
And you must insist that you go to London immediately.
To meet you? Who's here already?
Precisely. Though for obvious reasons, you don't tell them that I am here.
Why do you want me to do this?
It's better you don't know my reasons for asking this, believe me.
It's difficult to believe anything you lot say.
I realize that. But will you do it?
Well, I suppose in for a penny, in for a pound.
Good. Now, if you'll cross over to that car, the driver will take you to your new destination. And that, by the way, is the car and driver you were picked up by after leaving the Regina Bar. Now, don't forget that point.
You learn new things every day.
Well, let's hope the learning process continues this night.
I'm sure Mrs. Haywood would feel better after her bath and a good night's rest.
Has been quite a day for you both. This way, Haywood.
For this extra honeymoon, Robson, I ought to punch you on the nose.
Ah, you have every reason to be angry with us, Haywood. We will make it up to you, we promise. Although we will always be in your debt. Now, step inside and meet some of my colleagues, Hart and Slingsby.
How do you do? I'd
get a drink for you, Haywood.
I could do with a double scotch.
One double scotch? Coming up. Soda?
A fair splash into that generous measure. That's fine.
Hart.
A small one for me, no soda.
And no soda for you, Robert.
Oh, no, definitely not.
Do you mind telling me where you brought us to?
A safe house in the country. We understand Robert's arranged for you to meet Krollman.
I suppose that's a fair summary.
This was at the ball?
Yes.
Did you know the Russians found out we were using the ball as a place to contact a double agent? And that's why they cancelled it?
No. I was told I was going to the ball in order to take photographs.
Of whom?
Krollman, and of the man who called himself Wimbledon.
So the name Krollman had been mentioned to you by Roberts?
Yes.
What happened?
Well, the music was playing, but no one was at the ball. The music stopped, the lights went out, and we heard a strangled cry. I ran in the direction the cry came from and found Krollman in a study.
Well, London has given us the details of his death, but one point that wasn't clear was whether or not he was alive when you got to him.
He was alive.
Did he say anything?
He gave me a message for Strefford in London. A message only for Strefford that has got to be delivered immediately.
But surely you can tell us, the heads of the respective sections.
I can tell no one but Strefford.
I think this information should be passed to London immediately.
I'll see to it.
After finding Krollman, what did you do?
We went back through the woods, found a bar with a phone and rang the college, as instructed to in an emergency.
They picked you up and brought you both here?
Yes.
Was your wife with you when Krollman passed on that message?
No. No, I kept her away from him. He wasn't a pretty sight.
Of course. Did you stop anywhere en route?
Yes, there was a rendezvous with another car. I understood it was to pick up Aunt Claire and, well, bring her here, presumably.
This message Krollman gave you. Now, you're quite sure no one else knows.
Well, how could they?
Well, you didn't give London any indication of this message. A message only for one person's ears.
I am to deliver the message personally in London.
Would you correctly interpret as something not to be mentioned, even in general terms, over the phone?
What other interpretation can there be?
Oh, I agree with you, Haywood. Well done. We can assure you such safeguards are necessary.
Ah, what did London say?
He has to be flown out at once.
Oh, he can use the light aircraft I came in. I'll make the arrangements immediately. You'll be in London within 2 hours, and you'll be taken directly to Strefford. You might tell him I've one or two things to clear up, and I'll take the scheduled flight later today.
No, you won't, Slingsby. You're going tonight.
Roberts, what the hell are you doing on the plane? What's the idea of a gun, you fool?
I'm making sure you take this trip. Haywood, get out of that seat and start running fast.
But,
Slingsby, unless you want me to finish you now with a bullet, sit down and fasten the safety belt. You're flying yourself out of here.
You're mad! Haywood!
Get moving, Haywood, and take the pilot with you. Go on, get moving!
Right.
Is this far enough? Don't know. Those car headlights, they're blinding me.
Over here! Get over here!
Strafford, kill those damn lights. We can't see a thing.
Sorry. Was trying to guide you.
He's hijacking my plane.
Not for long, he isn't.
But you'll never stop him now.
I wouldn't bank on it. This little device looks like a pocket calculator. It happens to transmit a certain signal. A, B, O, R, T, 3, 2, 1, 0.
The plane. You've blown up the plane.
So I have, in one blinding flash. Another example of how modern inventions can be used for destructive purposes.
You're a ruthless bastard, Strafford.
Oh, come, Hayward. You should be thanking me. That bomb was meant for you. You, the pilot, and...
Roberts, he got clear.
The CIA will be pleased about that. One of their best operators.
But Slingsby, he was one of your men.
We thought so too, Hayward. But I couldn't be sure. Neither could Robson. That's why I told you not to say anything about our meeting once you were taken to the house. By the way, I trust you and Mrs. Hayward are comfortable there.
So there's time for pleasantries now, is there?
Well, no, not really. I suggest you get into the car, Hayward. We have lost a lot of time. Smithy,
sir?
Stay behind and ensure Robert's car is delayed. He'll be picking up the bits for a little longer, I imagine.
But
you know how to cause an electrical fault, Smithies. I suggest you'll prefer to travel in the back, Hayward, together with your wife.
Nothing like a hot bath to revive the flagging spirit, darling. I simply insisted that Mrs. Strafford bring me along. Darling, your timetable is simply covered in mud.
Not to worry, Hayward. It'll all come out in the wash. I'm now taking you both to chaperone your Aunt Claire.
But she's a grown woman.
And she's with Colonel Balakiff, and I don't want her to be in the line of fire when the Americans get to him. Furthermore, I don't want Balakiff caught in their clean-up operation, as they call it.
You mean the CIA are gunning for him?
Can you blame them after all the trouble he's caused them?
Well, then why try and save him?
Because he's lost this one, and we have an understanding. He's also been helpful in his way. My last report was that today Balakiff and your aunt are to climb the steeple of St. Stephen's Cathedral for a view of Vienna from 800 feet. Then they'll be listening to the Vienna Boys Choir singing a special mass on this feast of St. Wenceslas. Now there's some penance for a colonel of the KGB.
That uplifting, Boris. Music that sends the spirit soaring heavenwards.
Oh, but that won't be allowed for you, will it?
I can appreciate good music, Claire O'Connor.
But you won't be allowed to let your spirit soar heavenwards now.
I thought that making me go to the top of that steeple was your way of sending me there for good.
How can you go to somewhere you don't believe exists? But we must sit down. Oh, you do look red in the face. May St. Michael and St. Gabriel watch over you.
Why, Boris, it's Michael, my nephew. I'll wave.
He has seen us. He is coming over.
I've been up in the tower looking for you.
Quite a climb, isn't it? Good to see you again, my friend.
Friend, yes, Colonel. I've come to warn you. The Americans are on the warpath.
Ah. Then in that case, we should leave Vienna immediately.
I have a car.
Good.
Supposing I take you to the embassy?
No. They have it under close scrutiny. The safest way is to make a run for the border. Like the Batman of the Old West, no?
Which border, though?
Oh, the Czech border, I think. Not so fast, Hayward. You would draw attention to us.
I don't need to. We're already being followed by a grey car. Looks like Roberts at the wheel.
That is not good. You know he is CIA.
So I gather.
I only hope for my selfish sake you can lose them once we attain the open road. Someone has led you a well-tuned car, Haywood.
But they're still on our tail.
They seem very determined to get me.
Past life's finally catching up on you.
One of the problems of promoting revolutions is that sometimes you provoke a counter-revolution.
If you will take misfits from all over the globe and train them in Russia to terrorize, kidnap, and murder, you shouldn't be surprised when a little of it comes back your way, Boris.
Capitalist slanders. There are no terrorists in Russia.
Apart from some of its rulers, I quite agree. Boris, the advice you need is contained in a book which is banned and proscribed and has sent so many readers to Siberian labor camps.
What book is this?
Matthew's Gospel, chapter 26, verse 25. All those who take up the sword will perish by the sword. One of the problems of banning good books, it inhibits the gathering of the most elementary wisdom, Boris.
So, it seems I am to perish by the sword, then. Yes, the other car is gaining. How far now from the border?
About 15 kilometers.
Swing into the next opening in the forest. Then I will lighten your load.
Are you sure?
It is my only chance.
I think we're coming to a clearing now.
Stop as near the trees as possible, Michael.
Thank you!
Don't thank me. I'm coming with you. We've got to get into those trees before they turn in and see us. Come on.
It is a long time since I've worked as a field agent.
Oh, you're getting past running through forests, Boris Balaka.
We have made it.
We've made the trees. That's all. Here, lie down. Head covered by your coat, so you're not giving away by the whiteness of your face, nor the glistening of your eyes. Cover your hands, too. Stay absolutely still, and don't move a muscle.
Claire O'Connell. In these last few minutes, I come to see an aspect of your character I never realized existed before.
And what is that?
As a highly trained KGB operative, I can recognize how skilled you are in evading pursuit. Where and how have you come by such talent?
Wasn't I, as a young girl, out many a night helping me father hide his potsheen from the grasp and hand of the revenue men?
Come, Comrade O'Connell, you will escort me to the border.
And maybe one of these fine days, I'll show you how to go through a forest without making a sound, or as little noise as does a rabbit.
I can see the border post now. Claire, until we meet again.
If ever. Look after yourself, Boris. Yourself, if not your soul.
And you, my dear Claire, will look after yourself. And do not forget to say a few words for me, perhaps.
Why not? Miracles do happen.
Tea is always so refreshing.
And so English. I'd have preferred something a little stronger for myself.
And so you shall, Mrs. O'Connell.
For you, Haywood?
No, thanks. I'm trying to keep a reasonably clear head. I'm glad, very glad, that Boris got away. He's looked after my health on several occasions.
Because he looks on you as a mere boy in all these spy games, darling, which of course you are. The respectable head of the firm of Haywood and Company, who gets himself, his beloved wife, and resourceful Irish aunt, used by all these professionals. I must say I'm beginning to enjoy our extra honeymoon. Thank you, Mr. Robson. I think I'll have the same as Aunt Claire.
And tomorrow I'm sure you'll take me shopping in order to buy me another gown. The last will never be quite the same again.
Well,
yes. As for Mike's suit, well, it really won't wash, you know. I think something for daytime use. Lightweight will be more in keeping.
Of course, Mrs. Hayward and Mrs. O'Connell should have something on her. Expenses.
It takes more than this to spoil good Irish tweed, Mr. Strefford.
I take it we're free to leave, say, tomorrow after some shopping.
Why not? Oh, forgive me, I didn't tell you. The Austrian police don't wish to detain you any longer. Captain Frickner's River Pet... Why not? Oh, forgive me, I didn't tell you. The Austrian police don't wish to detain you any longer. Captain Frickner's River Patrol fished the substitute, Mr. Wimbledon, out of a not very blue part of the Danube. And with Slingsby also out of the way, I'm now pretty certain we've cleaned up the Vienna connection.
Is that what all this was about?
Oh, for the Americans, yes. For us, no. We had a more urgent priority.
Oh, what was that?
To discover the traitor in the higher reaches of our intelligence. I sent you to start disturbing the waters, as it were. Only three others knew about the plan to take Madeline to Vienna. Hart, Slingsby, and Robson here. When it got out, I knew it must be one of them.
And so you let it be known that Krollman had the name of the traitor?
Precisely, Hayward. It got back to the Russians, who were so afraid they cancelled the ball, let Krollman attend, and eliminated him.
And that's why you asked me to tell Robson, Hart, and Slingsby that Krollman was still alive when I saw him. And had a message for London.
Yes, I knew the traitor couldn't allow you to get to London if he thought you had a message that would unmask him. Slingsby left us to use the phone, you remember. We had it tapped. We watched one of their agents plant the bomb on our plane.
And when Slingsby came along with me, you let Roberts have him.
Roberts, you might say, assisted me with the obsequies and disposal.
Tell me one thing. Did Krollman really have the name of the traitor?
I doubt it. He was a double agent. I never trusted him. He never gave us anything useful. I always thought he was of more benefit to the KGB than he was to us. So it was fitting they should make the final decision about him. And as they couldn't take the slightest risk of the name of their agent in the higher echelons of our service being leaked, they didn't hesitate to remove him.
What about Madeline? Did they kill her too?
Yes. She was a defector, and by killing her in the way they did, they hoped to embarrass and discredit Western intelligence at one and the same time.
Excuse me, Mrs. Hayward. A wire by the embassy, sir.
Ah, thank you.
Ah, for you, Mrs. O'Connell.
And who'd be knowing that I was here?
You'd better open it and find out.
Well... I can sleep easy now. I know he's safe.
Well, who's it from, Aunt Claire?
You can see for yourself, Michael. I'm away to bed. Good night.
Good night, Aunt Claire.
Good night.
I might have guessed. It's from a Russian bear. It couldn't have been much of a picnic in those woods.
That was The Vienna Connection, another of the spy thrillers by William Keenan, with John Bennett as Michael Hayward, Anna Cropper as Doris, Ronald Herdman as Strefford, David Marlowe as Colonel Balakeff, and Elizabeth Kelly as Aunt Claire. The rest of the cast were as follows. Graham Roberts as Robson, N. Reitel as Captain Werner Frickner of the Austrian Police, Blaine Fairman as Roberts, Alan Meadows as Slingsby, and Peter Bell as the hotel receptionist. The theme music was composed by Matthew Camison and arranged by David Fleming Williams. The Vienna Connection was produced in Manchester by Trevor Hill.